who had the keys at the time at the beginning of the 14th, the night of the 14th of Nisan. So if the keys were still in the hands of the maskir, of the landlord, then it's the landlord's obligation. If the keys have already been handed over to the seicher, then it's the tenant, then it's the seicher's obligation. So assuming that the maskir was obligated in B'digas Chometz, well, now the question becomes, can we assume that he did it or not? Well, it's one thing to discuss who theoretically has the obligation. It's a much greater thing to discuss tachlis, practically, did it happen? So that's the shot that they posed to Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. If a person rents a house on the 14th, can he assume cheskas obatik or ain cheskas obatik? Can he assume that the mosque did what he's supposed to do or not? So Gemara says, l'may nefka mina. Gemara says, what's the difference? Whether you can assume, can't assume, l'shaila, just ask the guy. If the mosque is here, the mosque is in town, the mosque is sitting next to you in shul, the shachar is, so why should you rely on Drea Kapon? Is it a chazach that was baduk? Is it not baduk? Maybe yeah, maybe no. Just ask the fellow straight out. Says, well, you're right. So the hachav by askinan, that the leisel haidil ishule, the truchel haimai, that we're talking about a situation where the maskir, the person who supposedly should have done it, isn't around. He left, he went, he ran, he's on a cruise somewhere, he's not reachable. We have no idea whether the B'dik is coming to that. So now we have a shayla. Can we assume that he did or not? So what do we see in this Gemara? So a couple of very, very significant points emanate just from the way the Gemara presented the question, just the formulation of the Ibai in the Gemara. Forget about what the answer is. We don't near what the answer to the question is. Just simply in how the Gemara presents it is absolutely critical. What do those two terms mean? Cheskas obatik or ein cheskas obatik? What do those words mean that maybe we can assume that it was checked, maybe it wasn't? So l'chora, what the Gemara means is that the odds are that it was probably checked. People tend to do the right thing. We're dealing with Shomer Torah mitzvahs. So the odds are most probably that Reuven, the maskir, the landlord, did what he was supposed to do. Now, what that basically means is we can rely on Rove. We don't know for certain that he checked, but if those facts are right, the Cheskas HaBotuk, if we could feel comfortable enough saying that he most probably checked, so then we're going to be making. So what the Gemara is really asking, is there such legitimate Rove or not? Cheskas HaBotuk, is there a Rove that most people do check and therefore you could rely on it? Or is it not such a clear-cut Rove and therefore you have no right to rely on it? So it's that presentation of the Gemara, that suffering of the Gemara, whether there is a robe or is not a robe, that the Gemara jumps and says, well, even if there is a robe, what's the difference? Ask him. Since it's easily able to ask him, ask him. So what the Gemara seems to be saying is, even in a situation where you have a robe, now again, we have not committed yet whether there's a robe. That's exactly the suffer that they pose with Nachum Yitzchak. We don't know yet whether there's a robe. But Allah says, now that there is, if in fact there really is a robe, so that's exactly what the Gemara is telling us, L'mayin afkamina l'shaila. Just because you have a rove, don't rely on rove when you don't have to. Rove is a good mechanism to rely on when you can't ascertain the facts. But if you can ascertain the facts, ask them and don't rely on rove. So that seems to be clear from our Gemara, from that jumping of the Gemara, that halacha is true. So the Ran, Maseches Pesachim, picks up on that point. And the Ran says that that which emanates from Asugya, that you're not supposed to rely on Rove when you don't have to, when you're able to ascertain, this is something that applies to other areas of Halacha as well. So if we take a look at the second of the Marmikomos, so the Ran first quotes the first couple of lines in Agamara, and then the Ran says, we'll pick it up from the end of the first line, L'mayin afkamina d'leisei l'haydun ashayli k'loyma. The ee say l'maskir, come on, if the maskir, if the landlord is in front of us, Lo nafkal amina, there's no difference. The afilu name the cheskas obaduk. Even if you're going to tell me that the rove is that it probably was checked, kol hecha the isek aman shalina lei. If the masker is here, we ask him why. The lo samchina na chazaka. Now here the Ran is using the word chazaka. Chazaka is a very, very tricky word. Chazaka sometimes means status quo. Here it probably doesn't mean that. Here it means almost like a rove. The odds are it's most likely this is what happened. So says the Ran, don't rely on that most likely something happened. And here's the punchline of the Ran. Whenever you are able to be mevar, whenever you're able to ascertain, you're mechuyev to ascertain. Ulafika, and the Ran, makes a jump. Now the Ran says, because of what I just showed you for the Gemara Pesachim, now we understand. The Ran makes reference to a sugya in the first Pekah Maseches Chulin. He has the following shayla. I find an animal that was shechted. Now, I happen not to be a professional shechet, so I look at the animal, looks pretty good. Right? Looks like the Simanim cut through, looks like everything was probably okay. The problem is, there's really no way of me knowing that everything is okay. Just by looking, you know, after the fact at the Simanim, that's not a proof that everything is okay. There are certain things that can go wrong in Shechita that would not even be discernible, would not even be visible to the person afterwards. Let's say, for example, one of the halacha mashmasidas of Shechita is Shehiya, that you have to shecht the simanim really in one shot. If you shecht a little bit, then you stop, and you come back 5 minutes later, and then you, that will disqualify the Shechita. How in the world would you ever be able to tell that by simple visual examination afterwards? There's no way. So obviously you're trusting the fact that the shechit did it right. So the question becomes, I find an animal that was clearly shechted. I have no idea what the shechit was. I have no idea. So now what? So comes the Gemara has a machlekes about the following. Can we say, rov mitzuyin etz ha-shechita mumchemein? Or not? Or rov mitzuyin etz ha-shechita, not necessarily mumchemein. Can I assume that any person who shechted this animal, we can assume the rov is that he knows what he's doing? Because what we should do is try to shecht lam without knowing what we do. We know there are so many mistakes that can go wrong in a shechita. In a million years, I would never try to pick up a knife to try to shecht an animal. So since most people who shecht are in fact mumchen, are experts, and they know what they're doing, therefore I can assume if I see a person shechting, even though I don't know who he is, I never tested him, I have no idea whether he has the proper credentials to shecht, the rov is most probably is okay. Rov mitzvah to shechit mumchen, or not. So we have the pasuk in halacha that yes, rov mitzuyin etz shechita mumchen. So therefore, if I'm standing 100 feet away and I see a guy shechting, and I really have no idea whether he's doing it right or not, I can assume that he's doing it right based on the rov. Nevertheless, the Ran makes reference to a riff. We can take a look at the third of the Ram comes from it, the riff. Riff in Chulin says, if I see somebody shechting, and then I see he left, that I don't know whether that particular sheikh knows what he's doing. I can assume everything's all right. So comes the Ran and says, when the Rif presents this din of Rav Mov, he opens up with the words with, the sheikh is left. What is the implication of the Rif? That if the sheikh is here, if the sheikh is still in front of us, so then we have to ask him. We have to investigate. We have to question him. You can't just rely on Rov Mitzvah Tashchit Mumchenein. So it comes around and says, that which the Rif is saying in Maseches Chulin, that you cannot lechetchila rely on Rov when you're able to ascertain, is identical to what the Gemara is saying in Maseches Pesachim, that you cannot rely on the Rov if Efshel Avarim. So this is a theme that's now permeating two different areas of Allah, two different mesechtas, two different sugyas. There's a sugya in Pesachim vis-a-vis the rov of B'dikas Chametz that occurred. There's a sugya in Chulin vis-a-vis the rov that Kasher Shechit occurred. And in both places, we're seeing the same theme emanating, that rov is wonderful, rov is great, rov is fantastic. However, Evshel Levarer, Tzarech Levarer. Now, again, we're not sure why that's true yet, but we first just discovered that it is true. We have a riff in Chulin, we have a diyuk from Gemara Pesachim that are both saying the same thing. But now we have to take this to the next level and ask ourselves, what is this based on? Where does this come from? What kind of halacha is this? So there are a whole series of long runs. There's a run in Chulin, and the fourth of the Rambam comes, and there's a run, a further run in Chulin, the sixth of the Rambam comes. So we're first going to discuss a little bit outside, and then we'll see, we'll highlight a little bit some of the nekudas of the run, because the yisod that the run is about to develop for us is really the yisod ha-yisod, the fundamental principle that's going to guide us both in our sugya as well as the Rif Maseches Chulin, and really is going to set the stage for the klalim kol terakula, how much you have to be mevara. So the Ran develops two different observations. Both of them revolve the area of Hilchos Treifos. It's a quick introduction to the rules of Treifos. The Torah says that's a boss of a sudden treifa lo sochelu l'kevta shlichanoso. If an animal was literally attacked, or saw the treifa, it was ripped apart, then you're not allowed to eat it. What does that mean, a basa saw the treifa? So the halach Moshe Sinai tells us that this is one example, that an animal was attacked out in the field, but lav dafka. The real characteristic, the treifa, is not whether it was attacked by another animal, but the real characteristic is, does it have something wrong with one of its internal organs, something that is so wrong that the animal really wouldn't be able to survive for all that long? So comes the Mishnah, it's the third Bechem Sechet Chulin, and relate to us that there were halacha Moshe Mesinai, that there are eight different categories of Hilchos Treifos that can go wrong. And then there are applications of those eight categories, which break down to really 70 different possible treifos. So there are many, many, many different things that can go wrong internally with the animal. For example, it could have a hole in its heart, it could have a hole in its stomach, it could have a hole in its brain. There are many, many things. There could be holes, there could be breaks, there could be chips, all kinds of different things that can go wrong that could potentially render the animal treifa. If any one of those things go wrong, the animal is treifa min ha-Torah, when Michai Malkus reading it. Now the question that the Ran raises is, well, how do I know whether it's treifa or not? So I shecht an animal, that looked okay, it was walking around for the last couple of months, didn't look like anything terrible happened to it, didn't look like it has holes in its heart, in its brains, in its lungs, I don't think anything was wrong. So do I have to start to look around and to ascertain whether it does or does not? So the Ran said, it's Yaduah Mefursam, and my clients have been practicing for a Adoriderus, that nobody opens up an animal from head to toe to check for treifas. It's unheard of to open up an animal and say, well, before I eat it, let me check the brain, before I eat it, let me check the stomach, before I eat it, let me check the heart. We never, ever heard of doing such things. If I cared of anything, it's clear for the Gemara that that is not what's done, that nobody ever required of us to do that. Why don't we do that? So the answer must be, says the Rad, that we rely on the principle called Ro Behemus in and Trafus, that most animals are in fact not Traf. Most animals don't have holes in its hearts, in its brains, in its stomachs, etc. And therefore, Acherab Mahatos, we rely on Rove. Now, truth to be told, this Rove that we're relying on is actually a unique kind of a Rove. This is a throwback to last year, but we spoke about the Gemara says the first back of the second Chulin. How do you know there's a principle of Rove? How do you know we follow the majority? Maybe you have to have absolute knowledge, certainty, before you can be Mekil. So the Gemara explains to us, the first Bechem Chulin, that Rove is a principle min HaTorah. It says in the Chumash, Acher Rav Lahatos. Now, what was the context of Acher Rav Lahatos? The context was a Din Torah. You have three Dayanim. Two Dayanim say the fellow broke the window, he's chayav to pay. And one Dayan says, no, I don't think he broke the window. So the Torah says, Acher Rav Lahatos, you follow the Rove. The Gemara says that din that you follow two out of the three dayanim is not only true by dinei Torah, not only true by dinei mamonos. We can extrapolate from there lekola Torah kula. And whenever you have a question of a rove and the majority, the statistics are pointing in one direction, you have a right to rely on the rove. So the Gemara is quick to point out that application of rove is what we call halacha aruba de isa kamon. Aruba de isa kamon means that we counted up the dayanim. We know exactly what the numbers are. We could point to dayan pliny said chayav, dayan pliny said chayav, dayan pliny said potter. That's a ruba de isa kamon. So the fact that we're allowed to rely on a ruba de isa kamon halacha, that's a given. That's derived from dayanim. And the Gemara gives us as the prime example of that application in other areas of halacha, the sugya of teisha chanuyas. I find a piece of meat on the floor, and there are 10 stores in town. 9 of them are selling kosher. 1 of them is selling treif. So the din is min ha-Torah, I can eat the meat. No question whatsoever. I find the meat on the floor, I'm allowed to eat the meat because that's a rove. What kind of rove is that? A rove of the Issa Kamon. I counted up the stores. So this store is kosher, this store is kosher, this store is kosher, right? Oh, this store is straight. I found the meat in the floor, in the middle between all the stores. So therefore, acharav lahatas. So the fact that I could follow rove of a rove of the Issa Kamon, that's easy. That's a simple derivation from rove dayanim. But what's much more problematic is what's called the rove of the Leisa Kamon. Ruben de Leisik one means that nobody ever really counted anything. It's not something that we count. This is just something almost like intuitive that we know to be true. How do we know that this information is true? Well, the odds are that it's true. How did we reach those odds? Nobody counted. There's no experiment here. There's no fingers to point to say, I counted this store, this store, this store, this store. It's a Ruben de Leisik Kamon. Let's say, Lamashal, there are certain halachas that we paskin based on the reality, Rov Nashim Yodos Lates. Most women give birth after 9 months. Most women do not give birth preterm. Most women do not give birth after 7 months. How do we know that's true? So we walked around town and we pointed to every single woman and said, you give birth here, you give birth. That's not how we ascertain that rove. Just the world indicates that rove. We just, by experience, life in the world runs, we see that most babies are born after 9 months. Now, we know that every once in a while there's a baby that's born early, but most babies are born after 9 months. So rove nashim yodos latest. That's what's called the ruba de leisa kamon. How do you know you have a right to follow a ruba de leisa kamon? That's much trickier. That's not achira mahatas. Achira mahatas is ruba de isa kamon, where the numbers are pointable to, where the dayanim can be pointed to, similar to the stores can be pointed to. How do you know that the parish of rove even carries over to ruba de leisa kamon altogether? So that's a whole sugya, the first bet mesechus chulin. The Gemara tries to derive it from different sukkah, but the Gemara has a lot of trouble. And finally, the Gemara concludes, yeah, it works anyway. And the Gemara never really tells us what the makor is. So Rashi on the spot tells us that there are two different possibilities, two different sources. One source Rashi says is, maybe it's halacha makshav b'sida. Maybe there really is no source for it. There is no posuk in Tosha b'chsav. The fact that we live our lives and the halacha works with the institution of Ruba de Leisa Kamon is really a chiddush of halacha makshav b'sida. Well, maybe no. Maybe the Gemara ultimately concludes that it really can be derived from Ruba de Isa Kamon. The Gemara thought for a long time in the first Begum Chulin that Ruba de Isa Kamon and Ruba de Leisa Kamon are so conceptually different from one another that one cannot be derived from one another. And then the Gemara backpedaled from that and finally concluded it's not true, that we can derive one from another, even though they are slightly different in terms of nuance. One is Isa, one is Leisa, but at the end of the day, it's all number games, it's all statistics. And therefore, if the odds are, it doesn't really concern us how we reach those odds, whether we reached it through the vehicle of Isa Kamon or Leisa Kamon, at the end of the day, all roves are going to be good. So for our purposes, it doesn't make much of a difference what the ultimate source of Ruba de Leisa Kamon is, but it exists. Nobody says it doesn't exist. Everybody, Yaduim Mefursim, I shouldn't say everybody, some Tanoim who may question it to some degree, but Nimnu Begum, for us, the Halacha, there's no question that Ruba de Isa Kamon exists. There's no question Ruba de Leisa Kamon exists. We're not quite sure what all the sources for everything is, but the existence of the halacha is quite clear. With this background, now we can well understand why nobody checks for treifas. When I shecht an animal, there's no need for me to open up and see when it has a hole in the stomach. The odds are it doesn't. Now, how do I know that? That's a ruba de leisa kamon. Because we just observe the world. Most animals probably don't have holes in their stomachs. How do I know that? Well, most animals are not dying right and left in front of us. Most animals look pretty healthy. Every once in a blue moon, you get an animal that's sick and collapses. We open it up, we see it has a hole in the stomach. But most animals don't have that. And therefore, that's a ruba de leisa kamon. It's perfectly legitimate for us to rely on that rove. And one doesn't have to check. There's no need to open up animals to check for treifas. On the other hand, says the Ran, there seem to be certain indications in Chazal that it's not so simple. That sometimes you do have to check for treifas. What does that mean? So if you take a look at the end of the fifth of the Mamre Kabbos, the Gemara is having a whole discussion about when a person shechts an animal, can you just take a piece of the animal off? Once it's shechted, just rip it off, just take it off and eat it, or is there some kind of a process that has to happen? So the Gemara is a very, very vague phrase at the end of the fifth of the Mamre Kabbos. We'll take a look at the Rashi, the very end, Nitiya Mekateya Ragleyon de Katsvayo de Bole Nidos. A Nitiyas mean planting trees. The mitzvah of Orla. The mitzvah of Orla teaches us a very, very important virtue. It teaches us patience. The Torah says you plant the tree. It's starting to produce fruit. You're so excited to eat the fruit. And the Torah tells us, no, hold back. Hold off. Don't eat that fruit. Wait a little bit. Wait patiently for another year or two. And then the fruit, the next crop is going to be mutter. So the netios are, they literally cut off the legs. I mean, they give shtaik a musa to. They rebuke two kinds of people. They rebuke the butchers, the ketzvaya, with the boli nidas, and the people who violate the isurim of nida. What in the world does that cryptic statement mean? That the virtue of patience derived from the trees that teach the butchers a message, and they teach the boli nidas a message. So the boli nidas is very easy, because the violation of nida is also, it's a lack of patience. His wives can become mutar. She's going to the mikveh a few days from now. So hang in there, hold off. Don't violate the isurim of nida. Wait for a couple of days. Person can't wait. So comes the mitzvah of Orla and gives him shtaka musa, gives him rebuke. Why can't you just wait a little bit? What does that have to do with the butchers? So Shem explained that the butchers also, the butchers are in a big rush to eat the meat, in a big rush to sell the meat. They want to make a quick buck off the meat. So what do? So they shech, they have called the shech, the shechet shechs the meat, and then as soon as the shechit is over, they go run and sell the meat. And they didn't wait. They didn't wait for what? They were supposed to wait and check to make sure that there are no treifas there. What? They're supposed to check that there are no treifas there? Whoever heard of checking there's no treifas? We just gave a whole shekel to explain. Nobody checks for treifas. There's a din of Ruben Delaysa. Come on. Everybody knows that we don't open up animals and look for stomachs and brains and hearts. So what is that cryptic line in Maseches Beitza mean that we have to check? What in the world does that mean? So if you take a look at the Ran, we're going to skip down to the Ran in the sixth of the Marmar Kamos for a minute. So the Ran quotes another Makor. Take a look at the sixth of the Marmar Kamos. It's the sixth line of that Marmar Kamos. But Ode Hevi Ramban Zalraya, he quotes the name of the Ramban. Mash Amu B'Yomadeinu, it's a Medrash called the Medrash Yomadeinu. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Padja, Mi Megala Ofer Be'enecha Adam HaRishon. The Medrash says that Adam HaRishon, a very, very strong lashon of rebuke to Adam HaRishon. What was the rebuke? Shatala Yachot Alama B'Nisyon Osecha Afilu Sha'achas. Adam HaRishon, you had a Nisoyon. Last week's parash, you were given the mitzvah of not eating for the Eitz Hadas, and you couldn't hold off for 1 hour. You ate for the Eitz Hadas right away. You were created, you were given a mitzvah, and within an hour, you already ate the Eitz Hadas. Where's your sovereignty? Where's your patience? Why can't you control yourself? The Medrash says, Haribanecha, look at your children, Chal Yisrael, they're your descendants. Look what they're able to do. They're able to control themselves. And how does the Medrash say they're able to control themselves? Mishalom is called a mitzvah shenilam. What's an example of a Jewish person who is controlling himself? The following example the Medrash says, Adar b'Yisrael lekech behema sel ezo keves. Well, sure, a person takes an animal, a sheep, a goat, a ox, v'sheichet, and he shechts it, umavshit, and he takes off the skin, reichet, he cleans it off, v'yidek bereya, he does so much work on it, and he checks the lungs, v'nimtzis treifa, and it turns out there's a problem, there's a hole in the lung, there's a problem in the lung that deems it to be a treifa, v'nevin oichel, he refrains from eating it, holds back, he's able to be covetous, he eats it, and he doesn't eat from the animal. So the Medrash speaks, gives rebuke, gives Muslim Marishan, you couldn't wait for 10 minutes, and the Eitz Hadas, you were chaytay. Look at your wonderful, wonderful descendants, Klal Yisrael, they're able to hold off, and they will not eat from the meat until they check it, and then once they check it, there's a problem, they won't eat it. That kind of a Medrash. So comes around and says, wait a second. On the one hand, we gave this whole Shtikl Torah that there's no need to check for treifas. And clearly that's the din, and clearly that's the practice, and clearly there's a rove. On the other hand, you have these very cryptic halachic slash agadic slash musr statements of Chazal that seem to be giving us a different picture. There's lo pashut, you're supposed to be checking for treifas. Rambam Beitza criticize the person who eats right away. The Medrash criticizes the Marishon and praises Klal Yisrael who wait. So are you supposed to be checking for treifas? Are you not supposed to be checking for treifas? So comes the Ran back to the fourth of the Marmar Kamos, and the Ran says that I just got finished telling you that back to the case of the Rif and Chulin that you're supposed to ask the Sheikh whether he knows what he's doing. So let's take a look at the fourth of the Marmar Kamos, the time of the Milsa, the third line in that Ran, the time of the Milsa. Why is it that you have to check the Sheikh to make sure he knows what he's doing? Even though it's true that there's a majority, there's a very, very good rove that most people do know what they're doing. That is true. Mikol makom, nevertheless, miut de ein mitzuyin shchiach tuva. The Ran has now introduced to us a concept in terms of statistics, an issue related to numbers. Yes, there's a rove, but there's also what we call a miut. There's a miut hashchiach. We call it a miut hamatzui. That there are some shochtim who don't know what they're doing. And therefore, says the Ran, it's like treifas in the lungs. Lungs, you mentioned lungs. So the Ran is referencing what he said earlier, that when it comes to trefus of the lungs, the asignal yael the cholheichet ise kaman batkinan lay, that true you don't have to check whether there's a hole in the stomach, because the odds of there being a hole in the stomach are so unlikely, there's no requirement to even look at that, look into it. The odds of there being a hole in the brain are so unlikely, forget about it. But the odds of there being something wrong with the lungs are not a majority, but there's what's called the miut hamotzui. And from miut hamotzui, you cannot ignore. If you're able to check, you have to check. If you can't check, you can't check. The lungs disappear. You can't find them anymore. It's a different story. But if the lungs are around, then you must check those lungs. And says the Ran, and that's what's playing out both in Chulin as well as in Psachim. So we now have three different areas of halacha, which are all reflecting the same two basic principles. Principle number one is, when there's a rove, forget about it. But wait, not so simple. Qualifying that statement. When there's a rove, you don't have to be worried, unless there's a mira motzoi. If there's a mira motzoi, then you must ascertain lechatchila when you're able to. And principle number three is, when it's impossible to ascertain, that even a mira motzoi, you can simply ignore. So again, principle number one is we follow rove. Principle number two is we hold back from following rove when there's a mira motzoi. Principle number three is, that Chumrabina Matzah is only true when it's Evshel Levara, but it's Evshel Levara, then you fall back on the rove. And there are three different applications of those three principles. One is our Sugyot Maseches Pesachim. So if the rove is Cheskos Abach, we don't know yet that rove is true. We might need some time to ascertain that. But assuming that that rove is correct, that rove houses are checked Cheskos Abaduk, then Me'ikra Din Rala to rely on the rove. But Hecha the Evshel Neshayli. If the owner is around, you better ascertain. You better do the research if you're able to. Why? Because apparently the miut must be a miut hamotzli. It must be, it's not so simple. It must be, it's not so poshut. There's a miut hamotzli. So therefore, you have to check, you have to ask. If the guy's not around, then we rely on the rove, we have no choice. So that model of, yes, there's a rove, but wait, there's miut hamotzli, but wait again, if it's not possible to ascertain, then you just rely on the rove. That model is true in Psachim, that model is true in Chulin vis-a-vis Shechita. That's why if you're able to ask the shechet, you have to ask him if he's not around, then you rely on the rove, but it's shechet b'chanein. And that is what's playing out of the treifas. Other kinds of treifas, you don't even have to be mivayel lechatchila, because it's not even a mira matzoi. But treifas of the ray of the lungs is what Chazal was referring to in those two statements of halacha / musar, that you have to mivayel because they're mira matzois. Presumably, the karlai of what we said is, what if the lung isn't here anymore? So presumably, the din should be that if it's not here, so forget it. So then I'm allowed to rely on the rove again. L'chari, that's what the din should be. So we have to fine-tune that a little bit more. And we have to mitzvah on Friday just try to flesh out this principle a little bit more. Where this idea comes from, if this is the principle, the underlying principle that's permeating Maseches Pesachim and Maseches Chulin, Shechitas, and Halachas of Shreifas, then we have to take a little bit more time to understand where this idea comes from, what this is based on. Flesh on Friday, we'll try to continue with this. Okay? Everyone,